Hi there. Welcome to Service Notes. I'm your host, Reena Brambat. And if you have ever wondered what really happens behind the scenes in IT service management, well, you're in the right place. We're talking tech, transformation, and the occasional, oh no, the system is down moments. Expect real stories, real experts, and maybe a little fun along the way. Whether you're deep into IT service management or just tech curious, grab a coffee or water will do. And let's dive in. Hit that play button. Let's do this. In this episode, we are talking to David Cannon, also known as the ITIL guy, who's been on this journey since version one of ITIL. He shares deep insights and practical advice that IT leaders can start applying right away. This is one conversation you do not want to miss.
Okay, all right. Hi, David. Thank you so much for joining us on Service Notes podcast, where we discuss all things service management. So, why don't you tell our listener one fun thing about you?
First of all, thanks for having me. And I guess it depends on what people consider to be fun. But yeah, I'm an ITIL guy. I have been doing ITIL since 92. My ITIL certificate number is 345. Now, I'm not sure if that's fun or not, but it's
That is fun. Oh my God. So you've seen the whole thing evolve, right? Like continuously. So you probably did like version one, my guess.
Yeah, it was version one. Yeah.
Version one. Okay. And then V2, V3, and now V4. Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. So I guess given you are a veteran in this space, what do you enjoy about ITIL that kept you?
You know,
Or
I
you
th
kept ITIL going?
well, there's a lot of things about it. First of all, I started in my career managing IT without any kind of ITIL. There was no ITIL, and we had to try and figure out how to manage these large computer systems, and there was a lot of guidance given from the vendors, but nobody told you how you should work with the users in your organization, how you should understand the business of your organization. And for me, ITIL was just a really helpful thing. It made a huge difference in how I approach my career. For example, the very first thing I did was service level management. It was one of the very first courses that I studied. And it was just such a breakthrough for me, because for the first time I realized, hold on, you mean I can sit down with users and managers in the organization, and I can talk to them about what they use our computers for and what level of service is appropriate for them and when they're going to be using services. I just thought, well, everything has to be available all the time and it has to run as fast as possible all the time. And I began to learn that actually nobody expects that. And that meant I could do my job a lot more easily. I could plan things, and it made a huge difference for me. So I remember a time not having ITIL and then finding ITIL and working with ITIL made a huge difference. And then I think the second thing that's was really important for me is it was not an academic approach to things. You couldn't study things that are in ITIL in a university. In fact, if you try without any kind of experience in IT and you just get this material, it's not academic, so it doesn't kind of fit with the rest of the things you're studying. It doesn't really make much sense until you actually go into practice and you see, oh, that's why we prioritize incidents. Oh, that's why we have different types of escalation. This starts to make sense when you're actually doing it.
Yeah, no,
So,
that's so
yeah.
important. But Just to pick on your answer, the first, like your career, you had no ITIL and then you had ITIL, and you can see the difference. I mean, do you think today there are still organization and people working in IT don't know about ITIL?
Yeah, there are a lot actually, and especially if you're talking in the US, there has been so much focus on the technology training. So, for example, I think more people will have been through a cloud training course, whether that's a cloud architect or a cloud user course, and through a security management course. For cybersecurity, they've been through those courses, and the interesting thing is they've studied all of this really interesting and important stuff about how to secure systems, about how to manage systems, but somehow we've lost this the touch of service management. And I think part of this was in the early days of cloud. Some of the cloud service providers made the claim that the cloud does service management for you. You don't have to worry about service management if you're using the cloud. And I
Well,
think there are still people who believe that, but I think more and more, people are beginning to realize, no, the cloud doesn't actually do that. If you configure things incorrectly in the cloud, you can actually cause a lot of damage. And the cloud doesn't stop you from doing that. If you do not enforce security policies correctly in the cloud, you're opening yourself up to a lot of risk. And again, the cloud doesn't do this for you. It gives you tools, but you have to use them. So I think we've kind of allowed ourselves to believe that the technology is going to take care of everything around service management, and I think in many cases are just not focused on it. So if you do a show of hands today in any room of technology people, how many of you have heard of ITIL? I'm surprised by how many people do not put their hands up and say, no, I've never heard of this. What is that? It's really, really surprising to me.
Well, I guess after the CrowdStrike on July 19, I think more people would know about what ITIL is, because I think I read some brief about the lawsuit and stuff, and I think they were mentioning about they didn't follow the change management, or perhaps didn't quite understand whose responsibility it was,
Right.
to manage that infrastructure. So yeah,
Right,
definitely.
exactly. I mean, we're having all kinds of problems because these things are not defined. Whose responsibility is change? Now, again, part of that comes from the pushback against ITIL. ITIL was accused of being very bureaucratic and of slowing organizations down. And so people said, well, we don't need all that bureaucracy. We're going to put in place very agile kind of change management. And
Agile, yes.
to a certain extent, you need to do that, but to another extent, there are certain things that simply have to be controlled rigidly. And you have to be able to tell the difference. And this is where service management becomes really important, because if you're dealing with, let's say, agile product development or product management, you're dealing with one product at a time. You're putting all of the security measures into that product. You're making sure that product complies with whatever change standards exist for that product. But what you're not doing is looking at the impact of that product on the broader ecosystem. You're by all means, your product is high quality, highly secure, but when you put it onto a network with 100 other products, you've got no way of telling what the performance of that network is, what's going to get access, where the loopholes are that may impact your product. You don't know this. This is where service management is really powerful, because what it does is it takes everything into consideration whenever changes are being discussed, security measures are being discussed, capacity is being discussed. And I think you can assume that every individual product, if it's developed and built and managed in a quality way, is therefore going to do everything that it needs to. It's not a good assumption, because the impact of other products in the ecosystem is not always known. And this is where service management is really helpful. It brings them all together. It evaluates all products in relation to each other. Which is why, in some cases, change does get a little bit bureaucratic because you're not just looking at one set of changes in isolation. You're looking at multiple sets of changes from multiple sources all happening at the same time. Now, that's not to say we need to be bureaucratic. That's not what I'm saying. But it does mean that in service management, you need to tell which changes need to be managed more rigorously and which changes can be left up to the individual product teams to manage themselves. But if you don't, then you end up doing it either all very rigorously or all just leave it up to the product teams. There's no in between. And that's where the problems come.
I think I guess you're just saying like it's finding that balance. Like
Yes.
not, and I think that's why in change enablement there is a standard change, isn't it? Because we don't want to be
Yes.
bureaucratic. So it's like, okay, this is a repeatable thing which we do know, it's a low risk, and we can kind of safely say yes, go ahead and make that change.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that
Yeah,
ideal has evolved in that sense.
it has. I mean, a lot of people will look at ITIL and say, yes, that's the thing with the change advisory board, that every change has to go through the change advisory board. Well, actually, that's not true. That's just how some people have implemented it. But actually, the sign of a really good change enablement practice is reducing the number of changes that go to a centralized approval body. You shouldn't have a lot of changes going through. The only changes that need to go through to something like that are where you have pretty much every group in the organization, but none of them are really sure how the change is going to impact them. So get them in the same room and get them to talk about it. But we don't want all of our changes to be like that. We want changes to be clearly understood. We want people in the organization who are making changes and who are benefiting from changes to understand exactly what the impact of those changes are before they're rolled out. You shouldn't have to go to a change advisory board to answer that kind of question. So actually, a good service management practice will reduce the amount of changes going to a change advisory board and increase the number of changes that are being dealt with in a more streamlined, agile fashion.
So I'm just taking some notes for the follow-up questions because I think we have so much like wisdom and wealth of information. Like if I could borrow your brain, I'll do so. Okay, so one of the thing you mentioned is like if you ask technology leader now, like how many of have you heard of ITIL? What would you tell them? Like if you had to say like very succinctly in one or two sentence, like why should you pursue the path of ITIL implementation?
Oh,
What would
that's
you
a
tell them?
really good question. And the elevator pitch, what is the elevator pitch? It's an incredibly difficult one. And I'll tell you why that is because for people to understand the need for service management, they have to understand what goes wrong when there is no service management. It's very difficult to say to someone, well, service management is the thing that makes sure that all of your IT systems and services are managed predictably and in support. And continue to support business objectives no matter how much the business changes. That's the short answer. But that just sounds like, oh, that's a cool marketing thing. When you really see the need for service management is when CrowdStrike happens. That's when you say, well, service management is the thing that prevents that kind of thing from happening. Service management is the kind of thing that prevents airlines going down and canceling, 5,000 flights over 3 days because the scheduling system, had an issue with it because of either an uncontrolled change or a vendor doing something they shouldn't have done. Service management is the thing that prevents that from happening. So, in effect, the value proposition of service management, is very often a very negative thing. It's like, I like to say that sometimes, we sound a little bit like a Godfather movie. It's like, well, you don't have to invest in service management, but your network could go down. Your business critical systems could be unavailable when you need them. It really sounds like a kind of threat, but actually that is what service management does. It keeps your IT environment well managed, secure, available, And it makes sure that whatever you're doing with IT continues to meet business objectives as those objectives change.
No, I think that's a good point. But I know you said you don't have elevated pitch, but I think you do, which is like when things go wrong, you'll know, like in
You'll know.
hindsight.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's better to be proactive than reactive, especially like I would think
Right.
like if you're a small organization, maybe people and consumers will be a little bit more forgiving because you know they understand like you're running a small operations, and of course as long as it's not critical.
Well,
But
yeah,
like you know
that's
medium
true.
to big is like I think
Yeah.
so like I was trying to write a blog and I was going around like I made a point that today I'm going to observe like if these companies did service management, how would their reputation and their service will improve? So like I'm going on a website and they're advertising we are doing a workshop on 10th of November 2024 and today is like 16th of December, of course, you know. And then I was on one of the retailer website and their product name was like some rubber bath duck set with the image which was totally not that. I'm like, okay, that's number two. Number three was I opened an account and it was some kind of tax saving account and obviously I was late so I need to get this done as soon as possible. I emailed their helpline. They got back to me with a very standard answer without even looking what my question was. I'm like, there you go. Like in a space of 3 hours, I had like this many examples. Like, I mean, of course, it's not going to
Exactly.
make or break their business as much, but I think like reputation matters. Like, you know, like winning the customer or perhaps,
Well,
you know, accidentally, let's say the person didn't pay attention and went on a retailer website, ordered it, and then they were surprised, like, oh no, that's not what this, right? Like, so that's going to cost unnecessary expense on their part, having to return. Or like, I'm never going on that site. So, yeah, it's not like in that instant, but also like, you know, a dominoes effect of doing things using
It
service
is,
management.
and it is a domino effect. But in addition to that, even though the loss may be relatively small, for a small company, even a small loss can mean the difference between staying in business or going out of business. I mean, I was working in an organization and their website went down, and nobody realized it until somebody called them and said, "Hey, we're not getting a response to our emails. What's going on over there?" And they suddenly realized, oh, there's an issue because the website's also down. And it turned out it was a domain name service issue. And but the problem was that the 3 days that it took for them to discover that and the extra day to fix it, so total 4 days of downtime, meant that they had missed a couple of time sensitive emails that had to do with the bid that they were submitting. And they could not adjust the bid in time with the new information. Wasn't a big deal, but it was something they were counting on.
No,
And
definitely. Definitely.
so what was interesting, sorry, I'll finish that, because what
No,
was
go ahead, go ahead.
interesting is that when we talked about, you need to really think about ITIL, because ITIL will tell you how all of these things fit together. How the website is related to your email system and how your email system is important for submitting proposals. If you know all of that information, then it's very easy when you see the first signal that something is down to see what else is impacted and how to fix it. But the answer that I got from somebody who was there is like, no, we don't need ITIL. That's for large corporations. We can't afford to deal with all of the compliance issues with ITIL. Like, where in ITIL did anybody tell you had to comply with anything? Right? It's a set of guidelines. ITIL will tell you, hey, map your services, show how things fit together, and this is why. Where's the compliance in that? Where is the rigorous demand for, process and overhead? It isn't there. It's and this is something I find that people get a lot wrong with ITIL, is like they perceive it as something that is this rigorous set of standards, and it really isn't. It's, hey, it's a bunch of companies that have done some stuff that works. Why don't you read what they've done and see if it works for you? That's really what ITIL, that's what ITIL is about.
No, that's true. I think in my line of work as a trainer and you know consultant, I do hear that a lot. Like, oh, it's expensive and it's laborious and I need big team. And I was like, no, it's not quite like that. Of course, you need to define scope. Like, what do you plan to achieve by doing so? Like, and that will dictate how much of ITIL you're actually going to use. So yeah, I agree. I know we kind of jumped right into the discussion. I kind of didn't ask, what do you do now?
Oh, so
what's your job?
I do a lot of things, but I work at PeopleCert. I head up the Americas for PeopleCert. And what that means is pretty much a little bit of everything. So, what's really important to me is making sure that people are getting value out of the use of ITIL. So for me, that means giving people the opportunity to find out as much as they can about ITIL. So webinars, podcasts, events, and not only from PeopleCert, but also from one another. One of the most powerful things about service management is it creates a common language which people can use to find out what other people are doing. So, I may be working in organization A and, I'm struggling with this issue of change enablement. It's very bureaucratic and I'm trying to figure out how to make it more agile. Well, let me phone somebody in organization B who's done that and they'll be able to give me some advice using the same language, same terminology. I don't have to start from scratch. That's a great thing. So I'm trying to facilitate a lot of that networking, in that we'll see a lot more of that this year. But yeah, my role is to really just make sure that ITIL is being used successfully within the Americas. Now, of course, working for PeopleCert, it's not just ITIL, it's also a DevOps Institute, it's also PRINCE2. And again, PRINCE2 is not as big in the Americas as it is in Europe, for example. But there are still people here that use it. There are still people here who use it in a way that integrates with their ITIL practices and so on. And so, I'm here to serve them. I'm here to make sure that they're getting what they need.
So you have a like a really big responsible hat, like just making sure ITIL delivers and people know about it, kind of.
Yeah, that's really the job. And it's not always easy to do that because, as I said, the perception of ITIL in the Americas is, well, it's no longer as important as the technology. So we still need to focus primarily on the technology, and a lot of people have lost touch with that. So I've got to reinforce why ITIL is important, why service management is such an important thing to do.
No, good point. I'm gonna pause for a minute because
Sure.
I Okay, so I guess my next question is what advice would you give some newcomer wanting to join service management? What would you tell them?
So I would tell them a couple of things. The first thing I would say is don't study service management on its own because it doesn't really work on its own. It always works when it's together with something. And it was designed to be built on top of technology management. So if you want to get into a career in service management, you also need to be prepared to learn the fundamental technology of that underpins or supports the services that you're providing. So learn networks. And by the way, networks is a really important skill to have when it comes to securing IT. So you're learning not just service management, you're also learning the basics and the fundamentals for security. Learn about support and learn how a service desk works. Learn what happens when something goes wrong. Now, a lot of people like to start on the service desk. So, a lot of people will give people encouragement. Go and start on the service desk. You get a good understanding of everything. And that is good advice. I think that is a useful thing to do. But there is one caution I would give there. The service desk that you're working on, make sure that it is integrated with the back office. Because you need to learn the back office pieces as well. And there's too many people going into service desk now and not learning the back office. And so you have the separation between the engineering groups and the frontline groups. And that separation should never exist. I was speaking to someone Everyone will remain nameless on this, but I was speaking to someone who said, "You know, I'm the director of our service desk." He says, "I have one problem, and that is I cannot get the engineers in my organization to support what I'm doing." And the reason, very simply, was because incident management was made the responsibility of the service desk. So anything that was incident related, the engineers would say, "Oh, but that's not my job. That's the service desk job. Oh, you want knowledge articles to help you solve incidents? Fine,
That's not,
knock yourself out. I'm not doing it." Right. So I think a really important thing that I would give to, a tip to someone starting in the career. Yeah, start on the service desk, but try and find a service desk which is strongly integrated to the technology groups that are involved in providing services. Or maybe don't start directly in service management. Start by learning a trade in the technology environment. Become a network administrator, network manager. Become a database administrator, database manager. Become a security manager. Maybe just learn the technology upon which the services are based. When you're doing that, you'll start to understand and learn why it is important to be able to monitor the status of the devices that you're managing, because they're used to provide support for services. But then I have to go back on the other side and say, if you get a job on the back office, I call it back office because it's sort of it's in the technology, it's behind closed doors kind of
Operations,
thing, right? It's that sort of operations area. You also have to make sure that you're exposed to what's going on in the business environment that you're working in. So let's say you get a job as a, let's say, a server administrator in a hospital. Make sure that you take it upon yourself to learn how the hospital systems work. How does patient intake work? How does scheduling doctor's appointments work? Now, nobody's going to teach you that stuff. So my advice to someone starting out in this is take it upon yourself to ask a lot of questions. Get out after shift hours and go and find out, walk the floors and see what people are doing. Get to know some of the business people in that environment. In the hospital, could be nurses, could be doctors, could be janitors. Get to know them. That really helps you to understand the concept of or the importance of linking, what my technology job is to what's happening in the front lines.
No, I think that's
And
a
sorry, I
really good
there's
answer.
one other piece of advice I would give. A lot of people say, "I need a service management job." Actually, almost every job in IT is a service management job to some degree.
I
So
agree.
don't, if I remember speaking to someone last year who said, I'm really a financial guy, but I want to get into IT, but I can't find a service management job that will accept my background of finance management." And I said, "Well, have you ever looked for a job in IT finance management, in cost management, or FinOps, or something along those lines?" And like, "Oh, there are careers like that." Absolutely, there are careers like that. So don't think classical service management. It's, either I've got to be on the service desk or I'm not going to be anywhere in service management. No, there are almost any field in IT has service management opportunities.
No, that's a good point. It's almost like applying your service management principle in your job. Basically, that's what it comes down to. Like, you don't have to have a title for it. Say, like, I'm a service delivery manager, therefore I do this, and you're an incident manager, therefore you do that. I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, I think I have also heard a couple of my guests saying, like, you don't need technology to get into service management. And I think, even though I think it depends on like what exactly you want to do in service management, because I have seen like projects being run by service managers who don't have like Office 365 architecture knowledge, but somehow they are responsible for that migration because company wants to cut costs. They don't want to hire a dedicated project manager, so like that's your role. And I've been kind of been part of that space, like I would say probably 10 years ago. And in order to be effective, I had to go and kind of learn it myself. There was no class for
That's
me to
right.
take provided by the organization, but more like, okay, if I'm going to be talking to all these technical people, I need to know what they're talking about so I can actually assess, like, is this feasible? Can we do this? Or, like, I don't want to be like a note taker, just everyone tells me something and I'm just going to, write and then define a plan accordingly. So, yeah, no, I think I hear
Yeah.
you. I mean, doesn't mean you have to go and do the class or take up a job,
No,
but just
absolutely. Yeah, I
familiarize.
mean, you can get a job on a service desk, for example, without the technology background, but you are going to have to develop that technology expertise very quickly to be effective as a service manager. So, yeah, I wouldn't say you have to have it before you start, but you're going to find yourself really struggling. For example, one of the fundamental things of service management, I spoke about this earlier, is mapping services, defining a service architecture. This component fits to that component, which provides that to that, and so on. Well, if you don't understand, if you're not familiar with the kind of devices that are being used in providing that service, how are you ever going to put a map like that together? You have to understand basic principles of information technology architecture. And actually, you kind of led me to think of something else, which is, a lot of pressure in the industry to say, drop the IT from service management. Just call it service management. And I think, okay, I can see the value in that. But at the same time, there are some very specialized skills to working in IT that you need to have as a service manager working in the IT environment. And I don't think we should underplay those. I don't, you know, I think we should. I think we should promote better knowledge of IT. I think we should promote the sense of professionalism amongst IT service managers. Yes, we can apply that in other contexts, but that doesn't mean we should do away with or make the IT service management profession anything less than it is. It's hugely important and it's hugely specialized. And I think we've got to recognize that we've got to promote that, and we've got to have a sense of excitement about it. Instead of every time we talk about IT service management, somebody saying, "Oh, well, shouldn't we be dropping? Isn't it about time we drop the IT from the service management?" Yeah, maybe you want to go and make a business out of that. That's fine, but your
Healthcare service
organization,
management could be a different model, and
absolutely.
legal service management could be a different model.
Oh
But yeah,
yeah,
you can't just have
yeah.
like just remove technology. Yeah, that's
No,
not
exactly. And we have this movement in the industry. Well, it's not exactly a movement, but there are people in the industry who say, well, everything needs to be about enterprise service management, not IT service management, enterprise service management, which means, we take what we've learned from IT and we apply it in other parts of the organization. And some people have taken that to mean, well, that means that the IT component is no longer important. Oh, it is
It's
so
going
important.
backwards somewhat,
Yeah,
I
it
think.
is. It is. Yeah.
Because I think I remember my early days in ITIL where the CIO wasn't part of the executive team. For example, like CFO, like CIO would report to
Right.
CFO. And so, yes, it's kind of going a little bit backwards. I mean, I think every department or every section of the business has a space, but you can't quite say we are doing enterprise service management without acknowledging the IT component. And I think it's ServiceNow, which says digital first business. So that means like everything is driven by what your business does using technology. I think it's more important now to emphasize IT service management and
It
bring that to the
is very much
forefront.
so. You have to understand the digital technology that is supporting this business. And there are too many people out there, and I'm fine with people saying digital first, but there are a couple of organizations that are now starting to promote AI first. I'm like, well, you're promoting artificial intelligence before you even understand or can articulate the problem that's trying to be solved and all of the disciplines needed to solve that problem. Don't even worry about that stuff. AI will solve all of that for you. No, AI is absolutely constructed on rigorous discipline. If it's not, it is going to fail you. So if you don't understand that stuff, if you don't know what those disciplines are and how they work, your AI is not going to work. And unfortunately, I think I don't know what this is, but we in the IT service management profession tend to be very self-deprecating. We allow people to take the importance of our profession away from us, and we shouldn't. It is just so hugely important.
No, I think it's so valid. I mean, I guess like I have had like discussion with the colleagues where sometimes we question ourselves, like, because when things don't go wrong, it's not going wrong because we are doing our job. And they think like, oh, am I adding value? Because, and I was in that space where I was a service manager and I wanted to be a project manager because I thought like
Right.
project manager was very impactful. They made a difference. They actually built something or they launched something live. And I was just kind of that operational resource. But then over the years, I realized, well, yes, even though it wasn't in the limelight, but that was a good thing because we were all doing our job the way it needs to be. Otherwise, a situation like, a major disaster or, CrowdStrike or perhaps, company losing the sales because the website was down and no one knows, like those things are going to happen. So, yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think sometimes service management professionals are not very good at kind of bigging it up and kind of saying, hey, here is our role is important and our profession is important. And, but it's changing. I hope it's changing.
Oh, I think it is changing. I think, but I think it takes a different set of skills. We need to develop those. So we find instead a lot of service management individuals and organizations attending more towards, well, we're going to keep focused on just the operational components of what we do. And the operational components of what we do are becoming, more and more focused on end user environments. So in many organizations, especially smaller organizations, the whole role of IT is perceived as doing just one thing, and that's fixing broken laptops. And that's really sad. So to avoid that, to avoid being caught into that, as the perception of IT operations shrinks, is to avoid being caught in that shrinkage and learn skills that really put you where the actual service management is happening, and it's more and more in the business units themselves. It's no, I'm not saying we should all become developers. I'm not saying we should all become product managers, but we do need to be in the front lines of the business, and we're going to find ourselves there more and more because that's where IT is being deployed or digital technology is being deployed. Instead, what's happening in some organizations is the business units themselves are investing in those technology management resources. Now, they're service management people, but they don't identify as service management people. They identify as product managers or as developers or something else. But essentially, they're taking on the responsibility of managing the services for that business unit. We've got to make sure that those people and the leaders of those people are equipped with knowledge about service management, how to manage services. Instead of just saying service management belongs to the people who do IT ops, it's much, yeah, exactly. It's just so much bigger.
I know it's so funny because I had a meeting earlier and we were exactly talking the same thing where we are trying to bring the CSDM model for our applications. And we are identifying the owner or a support group and say, hey, here is a structure and we need you to fill this. And the person was like, yeah, I do administrator and we do development locally, but no, we don't have any group or nothing in our ITSM tool. Like, okay, we need to do that. Like, yeah, I mean, yes, I think especially I think larger the organization, the difficult it is to consolidate and spread that awareness that, yes, you can do it locally. We're not going to take that away, but we just want you to be aware that, here is the standard we follow, and this is why we follow this. So we get a good picture, good
I mean,
landscape.
I think it's really important to recognize that these groups that have gone throughout the organization are very important. It's important, we've moved from a heavily centralized IT architecture to a very distributed IT architecture to a very business embedded digital technology architecture. And that means that the groups that support those and build them have to be heavily decentralized and distributed as well. So we should, if we're talking about ITIL, we're not saying, hey, you should bring everybody back into the middle again and they should all be part of one group. But what you're saying, right? It's But at least let us know if you're playing a role of support. We need to know that you're doing that so that when something happens there, we know that it's you that needs to take care of it and that's
Absolutely.
responsible for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And we know the cost expenditure, we know the risk. Yeah, I mean, it's all good stuff, because otherwise XYZ leaves and like the manager's like, oh yeah, so and so did this, but now IT, I don't have anyone. Well, guess what? I didn't know you even had that. So yeah, we see that. We see that often. Okay. My next question is, of course, you mentioned AI. So how do you think this service management, IT service management space, can change with an
Oh,
influence
this
of
is,
AI?
I mean, we don't even, we're not even scratching the surface of this yet. We have so little idea, but I'll tell you some of the things that are happening. So we have, every time we have a new major technology coming through, whether it was the cloud, whether it was even client server back in those days, every time one of these comes up, somebody will say, actually quite a few people in the industry will say, we need an ITIL chapter for that. We need
Oh.
an ITIL practice called AI. That's an interesting one. Another one was we need an ITIL practice for digital. One that tells us all of the digital technologies that are out there. Now, here's the interesting thing.
Isn't that what
ITIL,
we've been doing for all these
well,
years?
exactly. ITIL is not a technology. It's not a technology manager. It's not, well, it's technology management, but it's not a technology specific guideline.
Yeah, it's not exclusive, like to say,
It's
hey,
not,
we only do server or, yeah.
it's so ITIL is, I don't think ITIL will have a chapter called client server or a chapter called AI. However, I'm gonna be careful about saying that. What ITIL will do is start including, as we learn about AI and how people are using it and what they're doing with it, we will start to include more and more of that in the ITIL guidance. So in the last refresh of the practice guides, there is a section about AI. Now, my opinion, it's a little bit light, and I think everybody in that project would say it's a little bit light. And it's light for a very good reason. And that is because we don't know what the best practice is yet. So
Yeah.
ITIL is a best practice framework. It is based on things that are proven to have worked. We can't just go and make up what we think is going to happen with AI and write books about it.
Yeah.
And then it's wrong. No,
Of
it's
course,
l
yeah.
let's keep monitoring and see what people are doing. I mean, we've already picked up a few things. I mean, for example, we know that chatbots are a major application that is used in service desks.
Service desk, yeah.
But we also know that many organizations are using them totally incorrectly and inappropriately.
I don't think, apart from Amazon, I don't think anybody's using them correctly, in my honest opinion, after using so many chatbots. It's
I'm
like,
not going to be a
no.
judge, but it's just, chatbots, as with any AI, depends on really rigorous data to support it.
Yeah.
It's not going to do, I mean, I got caught in a situation. I had a package delivered and, it was to the wrong place. And, phone the company to say, hey, you delivered the package to the wrong place. It wasn't Amazon. You delivered the
Of
package
course
to the wrong
not.
place.
Amazon can't do that.
No, and
No,
what I
they
got, of course, was an AI thing, and the AI had not even been programmed with the working hours of their service desk, so it didn't even know that the service desk was not operational at the time that we phoned, and it kept trying to get me to engage with the service desk. Like, you don't even know that basic fact, and then eventually. When we did get through to the service desk, they couldn't tell which driver was involved, which there was just nothing to tie it all together. So
Yeah.
if a human on a service desk cannot actually tie that together with all of the information at their fingertips, how on earth are they going to expect an AI to do it?
Yeah, so not fair. I think I read an article, it was on LinkedIn, I think, about that is a new job, being cooked up, if that's the right word. Ethics of AI. So apparently there are new roles or research going on where how are we gonna take care of the AI? Because of course, like, it's not trained well. We can't do the job we
No,
expected to.
it's not,
Like,
it's not trained
seriously?
well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the
Oh
one
my
thing we
God.
do, yeah, one thing we know about AI is that for AI to work effectively, you need to have good service management.
Yes,
But
yes.
what most people are doing is saying, well, to get good service management, we need to use AI better. It's actually the other way around.
True. True.
And I think, of
True.
course, most of the people who are saying that are the tool vendors who have an AI, some sort of capability, are saying, don't worry about doing all that. The AI will do it all for you. It takes people about 6 months to realize that it doesn't.
I think it's a bit like pie in the sky. Right now, I
At
think
this
it has
stage.
like a, big promises, but I don't think there is any real business case, even though I think I agree, like with service desk, it has a lot of potential, but you need good data, you need to train it, you need to do critical thinking, and you need to kind of map out eventual scenarios which your customer is going to come to you for. That's where it's going to be successful. Like,
I think there are some very good use cases for AI that exist today, and we can look at telemedicine, for example, manufacturing. There are some really good use cases for AI, but they tend to be very bound. They're very, they're not doing everything. They're doing very specific
Very
tasks in a very
specific,
specific way. So we see that. I do believe AI will go on to play a really big role, and I think it is going to be a disruptor. But at this stage, we don't know what that is. We
I'm
don't
waiting
know
like
what it's going to look like.
I'm waiting like they can send like AI maid and just like just come to your house, cleans up everything. Apparently, that's coming 10 years down the line. I don't know.
Well, I'll start believing that when Alexa stops telling me to buy something that I bought 3 months ago,
I know, right? It doesn't
because she thinks
remember.
that I need it. Yeah, exactly. Then I'll start thinking that maybe, maybe we're getting these things together. No, look, I think self-driving cars. In a Waymo in San Francisco. It's fantastic. And I think it's going to be great.
Are
But
you scared? Like, did you actually ride?
no. Oh yeah, I took a few trips and it was great. I think it is fantastic. So I think AI is certainly,
You weren't scared at all? Like, seriously?
no, I wasn't. But some other people that took the next car behind us, they took a left turn across an intersection, and a pigeon landed in the pedestrian crossing, and the car just stopped in the middle of the intersection.
Ooh.
Oncoming traffic had to try and find its way around the Waymo. So, it's still got a long way to go, but I think the opportunity, the potential is amazing. But to the point of ITIL, just what is that? We don't yet know. We can not talk definitively about what you said, not only how we use AI, but also how we manage AI.
How
That
many GI? Yes.
we don't have best practices for that yet. They're emerging. We're starting to learn. And when they do, you'll find those, more robustly in ITIL. But one of the comments you made is really important to me. Everybody talking about AI is taking our jobs and so on. But you raised a point that I think is really important, and that is that there will be new jobs, coming in AI that are in orders of magnitude more than the jobs that exist in IT today. Because of the kind of thing that you're talking about, the fact that, we kind of expect AI to think for itself, but it really doesn't think about for itself in every respect. We have to be there. We have to teach it. We have to maintain it. We have to coach it on what's important and so on and so forth. And I think there's a lot of careers that will come out of that. All of them, interestingly enough, will have a component of service management.
Of course, of course, no, absolutely. It's a bit like any piece of technology you have. If you think about from kind of like doing a math paper, pen versus calculator versus going to computer, going to Excel, all of that requires monitoring and training and learning and using and updating. So I think it's going to be the same for AI as well. It's not going to run itself. I mean, no matter what kind of people say, it's going to take your job. I think it's going to take some kind of job away and bring other kind of jobs
It
and
will.
perhaps like more of other jobs. I think that's how I I think
Yeah,
personally.
I think you're absolutely right. It
Yeah.
will take some jobs away, but it will create way more jobs than it takes away, as
Yeah.
that has
Yeah.
been the case with every major technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Okay. I have one question. But just before I go to the next question on the AI and the ITIL practices, because I kind of passed some practices recently, and I think you're right. Like they mentioned, like machine learning and AI capabilities, like the some kind of like bullet points there, like what automation technology you can use. But yeah, we don't know, and I guess people just trying to figure out what it's going to be.
It will take us a few years. For us to understand the full implication of cloud took at least 8 years from ITIL V3 to where in ITIL 4 we began to understand that this is a lot more than we thought it was. In ITIL V3, when we were writing ITIL V3 and the cloud had started coming along and we were wondering what was going to happen, we were in exactly the same situation. And if you asked us at the time what the cloud opportunity was for us in IT service management in ITIL V3, it was a really cost-effective and quick way to procure infrastructure. What it actually turned out to be was that, but in addition, it became a way to stage or position all kinds of technologies which could be made available to consumers anywhere in the world. And it changed the entire pattern of communities and societies, the way in which they interacted with companies, the way in which they interacted with each other, the way they purchased and consumed goods. All of that was changed by the cloud. The procurement of infrastructure to IT groups was probably the smallest change that was
Smallest
made.
change. Yeah, good point.
But we
I'm
didn't
gonna
know that at the time.
I'm gonna pause for a minute and I can turn on the light because it's kind of getting dark here. Give me a second. Totally get
Just
it.
hold.
Okay. So now this is kind of the last segment where I ask personal questions. Lightning speed,
Uh-oh.
so you don't have much time
Go
to think
ahead.
about it. Okay. So tea, coffee, water, juice, or
Tea.
Coca-Cola? Tea. Are you a tea person? Okay.
I am a
How
tea
do
person.
you relax after a busy day at work?
I will go for a walk.
Walk. Okay. Sorry, my kid is just walking in. Give me 1 second. Johnny, but mommy's on the call. Do you want to go down? I love you. Go change the clothes and I'll be right back, okay? Okay. What's your favorite book?
Oh, that just depends on oh my goodness. Depends on what day it is.
Okay, today, what's your favorite book today?
Oh, that's caught me off guard. If I have to choose a book, one of my favorite books is a book called Nathaniel's Nutmeg.
Hey, and what is it about?
It is about the spice wars
Ooh.
between England and the Netherlands.
Nice. So you're into a
And
little
it
bit of
was,
thriller? Is that like a thriller
well,
or?
no, yeah, well, a little bit of historical, novelized history. I like a little bit of that. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, but that's for mommy and that's for you. Do you want to go down, please? Sorry, because I want to. Okay, thank you. All right. Okay, what's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie? Oh, again, it depends what you're talking about.
What is on the day?
Probably one of my favorite all-time movies was The Mission.
The Mission. Okay, I have not heard that.
With
Any
Robert De Niro
what?
and Jeremy Irons.
Okay, all right. What's the one word you would use to describe ITIL? One word, no more than one word, no sentence, nothing, just one word.
Profound.
Profound. Oh, I love that.
Pro
It is
profound.
absolutely profound. Yes. Okay. And what annoys you? Like, something like you just can't tolerate that. Like really like, oh.
The combination of ignorance and arrogance.
And arrogance. Okay. And any parting word with our listener,
Well, I have to explain that last one. It's when, and we see a lot of this in EICL as well, people who think they know everything but really know very little,
Okay.
and are very outspoken about it, but actually are confusing everybody. And we see a lot of that. Instead of people sort of learning the facts and getting things straight before they talk, I think that's one of the things that irritates me the most. Sorry, the last thing.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you this question before I kind of
Oh,
skip,
yes, go
but
ahead.
what makes EITL special? Of course, right now there is USM and ESM and many other SM. What makes EITL special for you?
The EITL is special for me because it is based on research that has been done in hundreds, no, by now thousands of organizations around the world. And it distills that into a structured set of guidance. And that is the thing that I like most about it. It is a product of the community. Now, I know that the product has changed hands several times, but nonetheless, it still remains a product of the community. And I think if I compare it to many of the other frameworks, they are products of an individual organization, or they are products of an individual person or a couple of people. And the one thing I always encourage people to do is, ask who's behind this. Is it a single person trying to make a name for themselves? Is it, or is there a community behind this? Is there a group of people that is participating and contributing to it?
Oh, no, I love
And
that. I love that. I
yeah.
absolutely love that. And I'm going to remember that because, being in this space, sometimes you'd start questioning, right? Because you read stuff and, like, oh, is it dying? Is it? No, but I think you're right. I think you have to remember the mission and how it started. And it's evolving. Truth
Absolutely,
is
and it's
evolving.
evolving. And I think, here in the States, for example, we have six advisory boards that all they do is go and find out, what needs to be done to enhance cycle, to improve it. And these are not employees; they're people who work for normal organizations, who are saying, we did this and it worked, or we spoke to so and so and it worked for them. Maybe you should give them a call. And we continue to learn and to grow. What is in EITL? It's my favorite thing about it.
No, that's a really good answer. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for giving us your
Yeah, thank you
time.
for
Thank
having
you
me.
for sharing
Absolutely.
information. It was such a fun interview, and I have learned so much, and I'm going to remember. It's profound and research based.
It really is. Yeah. It's one of those things that when you think you've understood it, is when you start to learn that you didn't understand it.
No,
And that there's a lot more to learn.
fair
Every
point, fair point.
day is learning with this, because there's just so many people involved. You're not just learning a bunch of things written in a book. Yes, there is that component to it. But everything that's in that book is being used by somebody in a particular way, or they found a better way to do it, or they found a different way to do it. And it just never stops.
That's
It's
true. That's
amazing.
true. That's true. It's kind of creative. Creative
Yeah.
technology management, making sure we deliver the value. That leads me to one last question, okay? And that
Sure.
is, which is the least utilized practice in EITL, in your experience? Because obviously you've been in that space from 1992. Which is the least utilized
The
practice?
least utilized is, in my opinion, the service portfolio
Service
practice.
portfolio. Okay.
It's the
Okay.
one which a lot of people say they have. What they actually have is a project portfolio
Okay.
or an application portfolio. But
Okay.
very, very few people can actually list every single one of the services they have and tell you exactly what the investment in that service was, and what the return on investment of that service is, and what the future of that service is going to be.
No, good
So,
point. Yeah, good point. Thank you. Well, thank you once again. We'll reach out if any questions.
sure.
This episode of Service Notes is sponsored by 24 Trainings. Check out their service management training classes at www.24trainings.com.